Good morning, everybody. Last time we met, we had technically finished chapter 6 of Sefer Shmuel, but I want to go over the end of that chapter before we get into chapter 7. Let's go back to Pasuk 20. I just want to spend a few minutes on the story of Michal Bat Shaul. A troubling story, and on some level I have a feeling at least we should attempt to understand Michal, the daughter of Shaul. During the course of this parak, I will remind you, during the course of the parak, David decides that the time has come to bring the Aron Hashem, to bring the Ark to Yerushalayim. The Ark had been in Kiryat Yarim, and with great festivity and pomp and circumstance, he begins the process of bringing the Aron, and then, of course, tragedy strikes. At the first attempt to bring the Aron, it seems at one moment as though the Aron was going to slide off the wagon on which it is being carried, and Uzzah is the one who puts out his hand in order to stop the Aron from falling, and he is struck down on the spot by Yichal David. David is angry with himself. He should have known most probably not to have put the Aron on a wagon altogether. The Aron should have been carried, and this is the way that normally the Aron was transported from one place to the next. We had pointed out, of course, that this perek is the Haftorah for Parshat Shmini, where on the day of tragedy, a great day becomes a day of tragedy, the day of the dedication of the Mishkan in the desert, when Nadav Avihu are the ones who bring a sacrifice that they should not have brought, and they are struck down on the day that is one of great joy for the Jewish people. I do want to point out something that we did not mention when we learned this. From whose house is the... from whose house is the Aron being brought? It is from the house of Avinadav. And his two sons, Uzzah v'Achyo, are the ones that are bringing the Aron. Just something that all these years I had overlooked, and now I saw one of the Mepharshim who points out it's coming from the house of Avinadav. Who are the two sons of Aharon that was struck down that day? Nadav and Avihu. Uzzah is the son of Avinadav. You know, I've learned the Perek and the Parsha so many times, and it never struck me until I found it in a small footnote someplace. Avinadav. Sort of, maybe the name Avinadav should have already been a reminder to David to be so careful, so very specially careful in what he was going to do. So the first attempt at bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim fails. And then after the house of Obed Edom Hagiti is blessed, David brings the Aron for the second time, and in a sense, there's going to be a form of personal tragedy that will befall David on this great day. And we have the description of how David, with all of his might, and here is something else that it should be interesting. In the perek it says, Pasuk 14, V'David mecharker b'chol oz. David is dancing with absolute abandon, but he's dancing b'chol oz. B'chol oz. Who was the one that was struck down the first time around? Uzziah. In a sense, David wants atonement for the first tragic attempt at bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and David is mecharker b'chol oz, the oz to make up for the Peretz Uzzah Uzziah, who had been struck down. So here it is, it's the second time. And he finally succeeds in bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim. Which really means now that the city that David has conquered and built now becomes not only the capital city of his kingdom, Yerushalayim now becomes the capital city of God. It becomes Ir Hashem. Listen, Ir Elokim, what do we say in Ne'ilah? Ezkira Elokim ve'ehemaya bir'oti kol ir altila benuya v'ir ha'elokim mushpelet ha'sha'ol tachtia. Yerushalayim is Ir ha'elokim, and it's going to become Ir ha'elokim now by virtue of the fact that David brings the Aron there. And then we are sort of let in Pasuk 16, V'haya Aron Hashem ba'ir David, the Ark of God comes to the city of David, U'michal bat Shaul nishkifa ba'ad hachalon, and Michal, the daughter of Shaul, is looking out of the window. Where else did we have the term about somebody nishkifa? We had mentioned not Rahav. Sisra, not Yael. It is the mother of Sisra. The mother of Sisra, who's looking out of the window, waiting with great anticipation for her son to come home. There it says, yes, it says by Avimelech, Vayashkeif. It means, Vayashkeif always means not just happening to look. Now, there are sometimes that we see something and we just happen to see it. There is, of course, going to be a great tragedy in the life of David by something that he sees. We're going to come to that difficult chapter, the chapter of when Vayar, he sees Isha on one of the roofs of Yerushalayim. He sees a woman who is washing herself. That's when he sees Bathsheba. Nishkaf or lahashkif always means to be standing out there with intent. In other words, there are times that I'm in the street and I see Christopher driving by, right? I didn't go into the street in order to see Christopher or be held up in traffic because of it. I see something because I happen to be at either the right place at the right time or at the wrong place at the wrong time. I see something. Nishkaf means that one is looking with intent. What is that's exactly what I was going to say. What do we call observers? People who are placed somewhere to be observers. The American and UN troops that are someplace in the Sinai Desert are mashkifim. Mashkifim means that they are there, placed there with the intent to look and to see. What difference does this make is that I want in some way that we should understand Michal. We should understand Michal. Michal is looking out of the window. She has gone to the window because she is waiting with great anticipation, just as the mother of Sisra is waiting with great anticipation for the return of her son. She obviously, like anybody else who is living in Yerushalayim, is looking and waiting with anticipation to finally see the Aron Hashem, the Ark of God, coming to what will ultimately be the permanent dwelling place of the Aron. Now, to Michal bat Shaul, this is also a great day. Make no mistake about it. The idea of Nishkafa, that she's looking out, sort of waiting for the moment that she will catch a glimpse of the Aron. And then the next word is Bateda. What does she happen to see? She happens to see Hamelech David Mefazez u'mecharkel lefnei Hashem, King David, who is jumping and dancing before God, Bativez lo beliba, and he, in her heart, he became a shame and an embarrassment to her. Here we have this pasuk in the middle that is really preparing us for, unfortunately, yes, it's the second time that the Aron is brought. And this time the Aron indeed makes the journey to Yerushalayim. But the joy of David, is going to be shattered for a second time. And this time it's going to be, of course, the what will ultimately be a tragedy in the family. It's all right, so we are prepared for the fact that she does not look kindly upon her husband, the king, dancing with such abandon in the streets of Yerushalayim. All right, Vayoviu et Aron Hashem, Vayatzigo Oto b'Mekomo, they brought the Aron Hashem, they put it in its place, Betocha Ohel, within the tent, Asher Notolo David, that David had pitched for that purpose, Vayal David, Olot Lifnei Hashem Ushlomim, and David brought Olot before God. You see, the pasuk is also preparing us for something else. We have to know clearly what is David's motive. In the pasuk before it said, Hamelech David, Melech David, King David, who is dancing, why? Where? Lifnei Hashem, it's before God. David brings a lot, Lifnei Hashem. Vayichal David, Meha'alot ha'olah v'ashlamim, Vayivorechet ha'am b'shem Hashem tzvakot. David, when David finished bringing the olah v'ashlamim, he blessed the people in the name of God of hosts, Vayichalek l'chol ha'am. And he apportioned, he gave out to all of the people, l'chol ha'mon Yisrael, the entire masses of Israel, l'me'ish v'ad isha, from man unto woman, l'ish, to every man, chalat lechem achat, one challah, v'eshpar achat, a piece of roast meat, v'ashisha achat, an ugah. V'yelech kol ha'am ish l'beito, and everybody went home. V'yoshiv David l'varechet beito. And David went back, now returned to bring blessing and greetings to his home. And if you will notice, there is a space here in the middle of the pasuk. In the Navi, there is a space. It's sort of, this is the kind of space that tells us sort of to take our breath for a moment, because what is to come is not going to be terribly happy. And Michal, the daughter of Saul, went out toward David. And we did point out, and I think this is what we have to elaborate on, she is going to be referred to, she is referred to now as the daughter of Shaul. We know that Michal is the daughter of Shaul. Why do we have to be told that she's the daughter of Shaul? So we'll see that in a moment. Michal bat Shaul galzat l'krab David to David. But Tomer, she says, Manich bat hayom melech Yisrael. What honor and glory today, O King of Israel. Asher nigla hayom le'inei amot havadav, who was revealed today before the maid servants of his slaves. Ki higalot niglot achad harekim. The way an empty person would reveal himself. This is certainly she has obviously chosen the worst moment of all. The worst moment of all. Here, this has been one of the greatest days in the life of David, and what he would expect when he comes home is to be greeted by his wife, his wives, and his family with great joy. And this is what we call this a classic furagan. She tells him, but without pulling any punches. It's a sharp condemnation. David is going to respond to Michal in kind. His response to her is going to be, for that matter, very unkind. But I think that it's important for a moment for us to just stop and think, what has the life of Michal been over the last number of years? What has her life been? She's the daughter of Shaul, and she marries David. David then turns out to be the one whom her father wants to destroy, and it is she who sends David down a window in order to escape. She lets him out of the window. Window. All right, she's looking out of the window. Here is the one whose life she has saved. What happens afterwards? So she is separated from her husband for years. Her father considers her not married to David and gives her to somebody else whom she never has any kind of a relationship with her at all, which means we're talking about a life that is which is a Gehenim. It's a Gehenim for her. How does her Gehenim end? Her Gehenim ends, first of all, her three brothers and her father are killed on one day, struck down in battle. We're talking about a family that is nearly obliterated totally. Is it possible that Michal Bat Shaul feels that maybe the great joy of the day is for her personally something inappropriate. I mean, there's a simcha and there's a simcha. There can be a simcha that is done with dignity, and there is a simcha of absolute and total abandon. It seems that David has chosen to make this a day of unfettered simcha. Is she able to relate to this? I think, first of all, the very fact that she's not out in the street already tells us something about how she feels. She's obviously not opposed to the Aron being brought to Yerushalayim. She sees the Aron, and she therefore looks out of the window and is waiting for the great moment that she sees the Aron Hashem being brought into Yerushalayim. I think there's something else that we have to recall. She most probably had at some point in her life hoped and prayed that it would be her father who would be king, and he would be the resident in the capital of Israel, and he would be the one who would bring the Aron. Remember, I'm certain that as she's looking out of the window, or I think I'm certain, or I may for a moment assume, there was a tragedy with the Aron. The Aron has also journeyed a great deal. It was during, maybe before she was born, but she knows about it. The beginning of Sefer Shmuel, when the Aron is captured by the Plishtim. Aron is captured by the Plishtim. Remember who was the one that the Navi doesn't say, but the Medrash tells us, who was the one that captured the Aron? The Aron was captured by Goliath. And there was a man. There was a man who succeeded in grabbing the Luchot HaBrit from the hands of Goliath. You know who that man was? Shaul. It says in chapter 4 of Shmuel, it says that a man, Madav Kruim, with his uniform torn, is the one who comes running to Eli to tell Eli HaKohen what had happened that day. That man was Shaul. That means that the first one to have waged war and done battle with Goliath HaPlishti was Shaul. He is the one who at least saves part of the dignity of the Jewish people that day. Could she not have been thinking, her father should have been, if only Papa would be alive today to see this or to participate in this, maybe even to be alive and to participate, because in the final analysis it's still his son-in-law who is the one that is doing it, and for all intents and purposes the Aron is finally coming to Yerushalayim. So that Michal Bat Shaul has gone through an extremely difficult time today as well. Yet David, now it may very well be that David is too harsh with her. What comes to mind is the famous Medrash that is brought by the Ramban when Rachel says to Yaakov, Havali banim, give me children, v'im ayin, and if not, meta anochi, I die. Incidentally, about the only time that we hear Rachel saying anything. Rachel is the silent one. We'll see that in a moment. It would seem there is a difference of opinion in the Mepharshim, but from the Psukim it would seem that she may not have had any children. She's also childless. So if you want to throw that into the hopper as part of the... everything, there's nobody left. There are very few left. In other words, she is a woman who is deeply pained, profoundly pained. So Yaakov, what's Yaakov's response to Rachel when Rachel says, Havali banim, give me children, am I in Mezonachi? So he says, Hatachat elekimon, am I in the place of God? Hashem monami meich pri beten, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? I mean, and the Medrash says, Kach onin et hamu'ukot, is this the way you answer a woman who is so troubled? You know,
what he's really telling her is, you've been punished by God. What do you want from me? He's like, I'm God. You're punished. He's the one that has withheld from you the fruit of the womb. This is obviously something that is a was an inappropriate response. I have a feeling that David HaMelech's response is, from his point of view, appropriate, but most probably it is it's too harsh. It's too harsh. We should have expected of him to understand that she is an extremely bitter woman, just as we should have expected of her that she should understand there's a time and a place for everything. There's a time and a place for everything. It may be the day after. It may be 2 days later. Now, and more than that, what does it say? That Tetze Michal Bat Shaul Likrat David. This is planned. She's not waiting for him to come into the house. She goes out toward him in order to tell this to him. She has acted inappropriately, and I think inappropriate is most probably an inappropriate word. Huh? An understatement. She has acted in a way that was unthinking. Unthinking. And therefore, to every action, there is a reaction. And David responds by Yomed. Except, huh? Did you hear that? Did you hear that? Here I was ready to, I was ready to like cut her down. So what does she say? She says, it says four times that they say. What are the four again? Leah, Vateitze Leah. She went out, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, it says there, Likrat, Vateitze Leah, Likrat Yaakov. She went out toward Yaakov. She was going to make sure that was the night that she had hired Yaakov for the night because of the mandrakes of Reuven. And she says, tonight you're going to come to me. And then it says, Vateitze Dina, Bat Leah. Dina, the daughter of Leah, goes out. Go ahead. And there, does it say Likrat? I don't remember. Vatetze, Yael goes out towards Sisra, and she sees Sisra. Very good. I take it you must be attending classes of the Jerusalem College for Adults that take place in Harnov. That sounds like Esther Kitov, right? But that's fine. But they say, I'm going to say something about that again. The Vatetze Leah, so Leah's blessed with a child. In other words, Leah's forwardness is blessed, and she's given a child Yisachar as a result of that union. Vatetze Dina's tragic.
But Dina had a child.
But she had a child, yes. Yael...
had a child from that.
Ah, okay, we'll see about that. That we're going to get to in a moment, so we'll save that. The Halakha has summed it up very well. She wears many titles. She is the daughter of Shaul. She is the sister of Yonatan and the Malki Shua and Yishvi. And she is the wife of David. That's enough of a burden to be carried, more than a burden to be carried by anyone. Yes?
There's one other thing that I
see. You know what it's going to depend on? The Gemara says about Michal Bat Shaul. What does Gemara say about Michal Bat Shaul? He nicha tefillin. She wore tefillin. The Gemara says about Michal Bat Shaul that she wore tefillin. The only one. Now, there is a question, did she start wearing tefillin after this event? In a sense, there are some impression that seem, or the impression is sort of left that after the break between herself and David that comes as a result of this conversation, she sort of devoted her life to piety, to tzidkus. Like, I don't want it to sound like, yes, I don't want it to sound like that. But it seems from some of the Mepharshim that there was no longer a relationship between her and David. In a sense, she was a living almana or grusha until the end of her life. So it may very well be that she devoted her life, therefore, to tzidkus and piety. It may very well have been, of course, that she realized that she had made a mistake, and this was her tshuva, in a sense, living a life lifnei Hashem, because she had condemned David for what he had done lifnei Hashem. There are others who say that she was, it may very well be that she had been wearing tefillin even before that, and if so, then she should have understood David HaMelech's sense of lifnei Hashem, because she too lived a life of lifnei Hashem. And we're talking about wearing tefillin. It doesn't mean that, you know, she got up in the morning and put on tefillin for a few minutes and took it off and then went about her business. She spent the whole day wearing tefillin, which means that hers was a life of lifnei Hashem. There is also a certain symbolism of her wearing tefillin. It says, we learned it at the beginning of Shmuel Bet, the Ger Amaleki, the boy who comes to tell David, that Shaul was killed, he brings the crown of David. And you remember we talked about it, what an unusual thing, a king going out to battle with his crown. You know what you wear in battle? You wear a helmet. Shiryon, yes, you don't wear a crown. Except that Shaul knew that that was going to be the last day of his life. He was going to die like a melech. But Targum Yonatan Ben Uziel says over there, the crown that he was wearing, the Targum Yonatan Ben Uziel translated it as, he had his tefillin on. He was wearing his tefillin. In a sense, she dedicates and devotes herself to the memory of her father who died with his tefillin on. Who, in a sense, his death was a death of Kiddush Hashem. She's going to make her life a life of Kiddush Hashem. She becomes a tragic figure. I'm afraid that what I've done now is that we understand Michal that well, that we're now going to have to we're going to have complaints to David. Why indeed does David? Why does he respond so harshly to her? What I really want is that we should understand both of the people who are involved in this altercation. We have to understand them both. Michal is coming with a lot of baggage. She is watching that day, carrying all of the emotional baggage of the years that had passed. Does it mean, therefore, that she should not be able to control herself from going out before David? So number one, she goes out, and number two, even the way in which she, even in the way in which she condemns him, is unbefitting, confrontational, more than confrontational. I mean, she doesn't even bother. You know, if she would have asked him, David, please explain to me, why did you do it? Do you think that was really? He was dancing, you know, like a yeshiva bachar on Simchas Torah. And this isn't a... That's already in her mind. That's already in her mind. It didn't... Remember, you know what? She sees him as dancing before the maidservants. But the prophet tells us that he's dancing lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem. And yes, remember... There's great baggage that she's carrying too. The great baggage is that she's from Rachel, and Rachel is tzniut, Rachel is modesty, Rachel is the one who lives in a sense in concealment. And we had mentioned the Chazal that says that one never saw above the wrist of Shaul, her father. Her father was always dressed in a way that he was not revealed to anyone. There was a certain... in their family, that was dignity. That was dignity. You know, for her to see this, it was, I would say, it was shocking. She had never seen a king act in this way. Here he's wearing a long flowing robe so that as he dances, you can see his arms, you can see his legs. For her, this was absolutely shocking. And I'm sure, you know, depending on where one lives, there are certain things that you see, and they are simply shocking. So there's a lot of baggage that she's carrying, and a lot of it is positive baggage. The tzniyus of Rachel, the tzniyus of Shaul. Remember, they go looking to Shaul after Shmuel has announced that Shaul is king, and they can't find him. They have to ask the Urim and Thummim, where is Shaul? V'nehi's nech ba'el ha-kelim. He's hiding behind the kelim. We're talking about a modesty that was ingrained in them. It comes all the way from an elder, Bubba Rachel. So we can understand her. Does that give her license to attack David the way she does? Absolutely not. But we can understand her. It's important to understand her. Yes? As a continuation to something that we were talking about yesterday, this year, it's the difference between the house of Yehuda, and Yosef. Yosef, the personality of Yosef is absolutely balanced. He goes through all sorts of situations in his life where there are ups and downs, and he maintains his equilibrium throughout. At the beginning of Sefer Shemot, it says, and Yosef, Hoya b'Mitzrayim, Yosef was in Egypt, says Rashi, that's the same Yosef, Mitzilos of Asaf, from beginning to end, it's the same Yosef. All of the situations that he went through that would have taken another person from the heights to the depths and back up to the heights again, it would have been a life of a roller coaster. For Yosef, there was no such thing. Yosef is that calm, peaceful personality that is able to be tossed in a terrible storm and remain quiet, still. That's one of the reasons. That's something about him that is very, very special. Whereas Yehuda, of course, about Yehuda, we know that he has ups and downs. Vayede Yehuda, after the sale of Yosef, Vayede Yehuda, Yehuda goes down from amongst his brothers. Yehuda's is a life of struggle, and he is either rising to great heights or he falls, only to rise again. So that, if anything, I don't know whether a Shapkin should have put the two together, unless, of course, opposites attract. There is something calm and peaceful about Michal, and there is her retiring. And then about David, there is something emotional and tempestuous. How does David respond? Yomer David al Michal, lifnei Hashem, asher bachar bi me'avich u'mikol beito, before God who chose me from your father and from the entire house, litzavot al tinagid al am Hashem al Yisrael, to command me to be the prince over the people of God and all of Israel. V'sichakti lifnei Hashem. Again, the word that keeps being repeated over here is lifnei Hashem. Sichakti, yes, I played and I was full of joy and abandon before God. Unikaloti od mizot. I should even be smaller than this. Vayiti shofal beinai, and I should be low in my own eyes. V'imha amahot asher amart imam ikaveda. With those maidservants, that's where my covet is going to be. David has absolutely no pretensions when he stands lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem, he is not the melech, he is David. Lifnei Hashem, there is only one melech, and that's melech malchei hamlachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He does not see himself as a melech, he sees himself as a commoner in the presence of God. Very good. Very good. Yes, you made a very good point. When it says she looked out of the window, she's referred to as Michal Bat Shaul. When she goes out toward David, it says, Vateitse, who went out? It's Michal Bat Shaul. The only time that she's referred to as Michal is Vayomer David El Michal. No, the Pasuk says, Vayomer David said to Michal. And it doesn't say El Michal Bat Shaul. Why doesn't it say El Michal Bat Shaul? Well, that was one of the things I was thinking of. In other words, this is a David to Michal talk, because what are the words that come immediately after Michal? Lifnei Hashem. In a sense, before God, I'm not David HaMelech, and you're not the princess, the daughter of Shaul. You're Michal. I'm David, and you're Michal, and Lifnei Hashem, there is no position, no prominence, nothing. Because all of her problem with David is, as she looks out of the window, who's looking out of the window? Michal, the daughter of Shaul, is looking out of the window. When she walks out toward him, ready to attack him, and she does, who walks out toward her? Michal bat Shaul. When David speaks to her, he lets her know, you should know, you and I, we are neither king nor queen nor daughter of a king, Lifnei Hashem. Asher bacha bimei avicha mikol beito letzavot oti nagid alam Hashem al Yisrael. Unekaloti, all right. And then comes that last pasuk, ule Michal bat Shaul, lo hayala yalad ad yom ota. She had no child until the day of her, until the day of her death. So there are those who say that number one, she did have children before, but she didn't have children afterwards. There are those who say that she died in childbirth. She died in childbirth. There are Mepharshim who say that she had no child because her relationship with David was over. The only thing is, if her relationship with David is over, then the problem is, why does it say that she had no child until the day of her death? So it's not that she had no child, she had no relationship with David until the day of her death. There's also the problem for which I don't know, I'll throw it open to you. You're all talking today and you're doing very well. Shep Nachas on you all. Is this an onesh? Is this a punishment for...
Otherwise, why would it be mentioned?
Yeah, all right. So what is the punishment? That's what I'm asking. In other words, how does the punishment fit the crime? Right, there has to be mida keneged mida, measure for measure. So what is the measure for measure? What is it the?
She resented the joy that David had, and she had the joy.
I'm listening.
It's also getting ready for the scenario that's coming, that Bathsheba's son is going to be the king and not her. That there's no dynasty from the...
Not bad. Not bad. What would have happened if they would have had a child?
Oh.
You know, no. If they would have had a child, that child would have been Malchus from both sides, from Papa and Mama.
Like that.
Right. So you don't know what you said. You don't know what you're saying. That's the punishment. There lies the Mida Kineged Mida. What was it that brought about her attack on David? Because she feels herself as the daughter of royalty. So therefore the punishment is that there would be no royalty coming from her. Would she have had a child with David, that child would have been the natural heir to the throne. And there is no longer going to be any Malchus to show. Because her chet is the result of the fact that she sees herself as Michal Bat Shaul. So therefore, to Michal Bat Shaul, the Pasuk says, Lo hoya lo yolad ad yom motah, she didn't have a child until the day of her death.
Because it says before that she has a child, then there's a continuation.
So what I'm saying is, the punishment over here is a punishment for her. In other words, I know what you're saying. You know, she should not have a child because the house of Shaul had been rejected. Except, of course, remember, the fact is that the child that would be born would be, from a tribal point of view, the child of David. So therefore, there has to be a special punishment for her. It was her exaggerated sense of Malchut, of royalty, that brought her to what happened in this parak. And therefore she does not deserve that there should be Malchut coming from her. But I want to tell you another fascinating pshat. Not everything is an onesh. The Abarbanel makes a comment over here that is so fascinating. Later on, in chapter 21, there's going to be a terrible tragedy. 3 years, there's going to be a famine in the land. And David doesn't know why there's a famine in the land. He turns to, he turns finally to God. He says, you know what, 3 years of famine, no rain, drought. And here I'm going to read a few psukkim in chapter 21. Vayihi Rav b'mei David, Shalosh Shanim. There was a famine. Chapter 21. There was a famine in the days of David, 3 years. Shana acharei shana, year after year. Vayivakesh David et pnei Hashem, and David sought pnei Hashem. He sought him out. Incidentally, here also, at crucial moments, there is always a separation, a pause in the pasuk. There is a pause in the middle of the pasuk for the response of the Rebbeinu. Vayomer Hashem, Hashem said, El Sho'ol Vel Bet Hatamim. The reason why there is a famine in the land, it's because of Sho'ol and the house of blood. Al Asher Heimitet HaGivonim, that he had put the Givonim to death. Terrible stories when he told it. Sho'ol had destroyed Nov, Ir HaKohanim. Nov, the city of Kohanim. Who are the ones that served in the Migdash all the time? The Mishkan. The ones who served in the Mishkan were the people of Givon, who Yahushua, the Givonim, were the ones who had entered into a treaty on false pretenses. In other words, they had entered into a treaty and they never kept their... I mean, they lied. I mean, we know about treaties that are entered into that are one big lie. This was Aslo minus one. So the only thing is that Yahushua says, we've promised and we've sworn to the Givonim that we're going to keep them, leave them alive. So Bayomahu, on that day, Yahushua made them Chotvei Eitzim V'Shoavei Mayim. They were forever going to be the wood choppers and the water carriers for the Mishkan. Which means that if when Sho'ol destroys Nov, the city of the Kohanim, so first of all, they're out of a parnasa. And second, it seems either all of the Givonim of the city were also wiped out by Sho'ol. According to another pshat, we will see when we get to this parak, seven Givonim were killed. And the Givonim never forgave Sho'ol for it. And it was the... it says, Vayikra HaMelech LaGivonim, the king called the Givonim and he said to them, and here's a famous passage, the Gemara brings us a number of times, V'haGivonim lo mi b'nei Yisrael him, the Givonim, don't think that these are Jews living in the city of Givon, these are Givonim, people who are non-Jews, lo mi b'nei Yisrael him, ki mi yeter ha'amori. The Gemara says, what's going to happen over here is the Givonim are going to say that they have not forgiven nor forgotten what Sho'ol did to them, and what they want, therefore, is seven members of the house of Sho'ol, whom they're going to put to death. And that's exactly what David does. David says, "Ani atein." Watch. Ubnei Yisrael nishbu lahem. Israel had sworn to them that they were going to keep them alive. Vayivakei Sho'ol hakotam, and Sho'ol wanted to destroy them. Became otol ubnei Yisrael v'Yehuda in his zealousness for ubnei Yisrael v'Yehuda. The truth is, it was a fun type of Sho'ol. Sho'ol, the truth is, he was looking for an excuse to wipe out the Givonim. He didn't want any Goyim in Eretz Yisrael. Finished. Want Goyim in Eretz Yisrael. Vayomer David al Givonim. So David said to the Givonim, what should I do for you? How will we find atonement? Nachalat Hashem said, blessing should come down upon the inheritance of God, which is the Nachalat Hashem, that is Eretz Yisrael. There's no rain. There's hunger, there's famine in the land. The Gemara said, "Ain lanu kesef, the zohav, umshol bin beito." We don't want any gold or silver from the house of Sho'ol. We don't want any money. You're not going to redeem yourself by ransom. We're not going to take any blood money. "Ain lanu ish lahamis b'Yisrael." There isn't a Jew that we want to kill. Vayomer, so he said, "Matem omdim, eselachem." Whatever you say, I'm going to do. Vayomer v'lamelech. They said to the king, Ha'ish asher ki lanu, the man who destroyed us, Tasher dima lanu, and the one who wanted, thought to uproot us, Nishmadnu, he destroyed us, may he yatsev the whole Gvul Yisrael, that we don't have people throughout the boundaries of Israel. Yutan lanu shivat anashim ibanav, give us seven of his sons, Vahukanu Hashem, and we will hang them before God, Givat Shaul, in his hometown, Givat Shaul, Bechir Hashem. Vayomer HaMelech, the king said, Ani Atein. Here, incidentally, there's a very big pause in the middle of the pasuk. Do you know what the big pause represents? Do you understand what David has to go through until he makes such a painful, painful decision? Until the king says, Ani etein, he's going to give seven members of the family of Shaul over to the Gibeonim, and they're going to be put to death. But he had made a promise to Yonatan. With Yonatan, he had entered into a relationship between him and Yonatan forever and ever after. He cannot touch the house of Yonatan. So therefore, Vayachmol HaMelech al Mephibosheth ben Yonatan ben Shaul. He has mercy and compassion upon Mephibosheth, the son of Yonatan. Al Shvuat Hashem Asher ben Otan, because there was an oath of God between them. Incidentally, of course, he does not want to do the same thing that Shaul had done. There had been a Shvuat Hashem between Klal Yisrael and the Givonim. And Shaul broke that. He has a Shvuat Hashem between himself and the family of Yonatan. He can't break that either. Asher ben Otan ben David u ben Yonatan ben Shaul. So the king took Shnei b'nei Ritzba bat Aya, Asher yolda l'Shaul, two children of Ritzba bat Aya, Armoni and Mephibosheth, and five children of Michal bat Shaul. Wait a minute. Asher yolda l'Adriel ben Barzilai ha-Mecholati. The Gemara says, and the Mepharshim explains, she didn't have five children. These five children were her Adriel ben Barzilai was the husband of her sister Merav, but she raised the children, so they were called her children. Why am I reading the story? I'm reading the story because the Abarbanel says, can you imagine the frightening dilemma that David HaMelech would have had if he and Michal would have had a child? What would he do then? If there would be a child that would be born to Michal and David, is he going to play favorites and say, no, I'm going to take the two children of Ritzba Bataya and the five children of Merab, they're going to be put to death. My child is not going to be put to death. Says the Abarbanel that this last pasuk over here is not as much an onesh as it is a blessing in disguise. Would she have had a child, David would have been torn by an impossible, impossible dilemma. This is a classic example of not every klala is a klala. A klala can sometimes be a bracha. Of course, what's important is that it appears here. Michal bat Shaul lo hayola yolad ad yom mota, which means that according to the Abarbanel, the pasuk can be read on two levels. It can be read as an onesh to Michal, or as a blessing to David, and most probably a blessing to Michal as well. Is it therefore a blessing to David because of his great devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Because remember, it's more than that. Who's going to tell him, who tells him that the 3 years of famine is because of the house of Shaul and the blood that was spilled of the Givonim? That was Hashem tells him that. We just learned that. It was Hashem who tells him that. In other words, the house of Shaul is going to be destroyed. The only one who's going to remain is Mephibosheth. So in other words, Hashem tells him that. It could very well be, therefore, that this is a bracha both to David and to Michal that they're not going to have a child. I don't know. How do you think? Do you think Rivka would have felt better if she would have had the Nishkin twins, the Adafim twins? She would have had one, Yaakov. Is every child necessarily the great blessing? I don't know. I really wanted to start this year just by, finishing reviewing, and the whole year really is based on the next chapter. The next chapter is going to open up a whole new world to us. So you know what you're going to have to do. I'm going to give you homework. You're going to read the next chapter. They're going to be difficult chapters that are coming, but magnificent ones. Yes.
Very interesting.
What do you?
I find it very distressing.
That?
To take seven innocent people and give them over to Gideon to be killed.
Well, that's,
I think it's a very distressing...
It's precisely for that reason that I made two comments. One was, the Rebbeinu Shlom tells him, he asks of the Urim V'Tumim, and the Urim V'Tumim says that the famine are all of Klal Yisrael is suffering because of Shaul Beit Hadamim Al Mot HaGivonim. And it's stated clearly by God. And in it, so you're going to ask, Kashan the Rebbeinu Shlom. Okay, that'll come back.
Well, not the Kashan, but it didn't have to be through his hands.
He had no choice. And despite the fact that he knows that he has to do what he has to do, there's that big pause until finally he says, Ani etain, I will give. But you know, we still have a number of weeks till we get to that perek, and by then I hope we'll find something better. Meanwhile, I'm still trying to prepare for the story of David and Bathsheba that I'm sure you are all going to give me a tough time over here. All right.